This is West End Big Book Awakening, monthly in-depth look at a big book. Today we have Kathy and Katie telling us about We Agnostics.
Good morning. I'm Katie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Katie.
We've split the chapter and the spiritual experience in appendix into four sections, and we'll simply alternate each discussing a few pages and then switch. And first, a couple short words by way of introduction from each of us. I volunteered with Kathy to talk on this chapter for two reasons. One, because God and spirituality are absolutely central to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And because occasionally when I read We Agnostics, it feels troublesome to me. And I decided to take this opportunity to read the chapter very carefully, listening for understanding. Recovery through AA involves spiritual experience and relationship to a higher power. And this chapter is explaining this, and also I think it aims to address the resistance that I and many others may have in encountering this kind of God or spirit language.
I'm Kathy, I'm an alcoholic.
Okay.
There's a few things that are really important to me about the chapter We Agnostics. One of them is that it affirms that different paths in recovery are not only possible but probable. It happens differently for everybody, and that's an important part of my recovery. I also like in this chapter how there's an evolution of ideas. You see them take a small idea and expand on it over and over in this chapter, and then it also drills into the critical idea in our recovery that we need outside help. It's not just something that we're going to do by ourselves. A little bit about my spiritual background. I was raised in a very religious household. I had a really strong faith. And so I knew comfort from that relationship. I had a strong relationship with the God of my understanding at that time. And in my mid-40s, when I started kind of coinciding with the time that I was drinking more and more and more, I was also kind of having a crisis of faith with the particular religion, the religious, hierarchy, I guess, that I was in, and it just shook me right to my core. And so this chapter has been really instrumental in my recovery in helping me reconnect with a new kind of a new concept of a higher power for me.
Well, I'm going to be referencing the pages that I'm talking about in case it's helpful to anyone, and also primarily because it's helpful to me or I'll lose my way. So I'm starting with pages 44 to 47. And this part of the chapter introduces the idea that only a spiritual experience will conquer alcoholism. And to put that into context, a couple of times recently a member of our meeting has use the phrase, AA doesn't try to convince us of the existence of God, it convinces us of the need of God. And so that's the purpose of this chapter, and for me, reading it is to convince me of the practical need for a higher power. And from page 44, if, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when you're drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels she is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Now, regardless of how a person lives on a spiritual basis or what type of spiritual experience that she has, that experience, whatever it is, and her attempt to align herself around that provides the power to begin to relieve her alcoholism. And so what that means to me is that I have to have some sense of my spirit. So spirit means anything that isn't material. I have a material self and a spiritual self. And my spiritual self is who I am apart from my body or my stuff. My spirit is who I am regardless of the health or strength or beauty or size of this body, apart from where I live or what I own or use or consume. So for me, a spiritual experience is when I experience that spirit and how it connects to other spirits. That connection to me is love. Love and belonging equals a spiritual connection. And having a spiritual experience means having a sense of purpose and belonging. It's knowing that I contribute and that I'm connected to you and to everyone. And when I have that sense of connection, according to this chapter, I start to recover. So to go, that sounds a lot like being good, but the chapter says being good and virtuous doesn't cut it. Having a code of morals doesn't have the needed power. Being moral is only about me and my being able to behave correctly. It's a matter of my will. It may be very good, but it doesn't connect me to all of you. And it doesn't connect me to anything bigger or my higher power. My disease of alcoholism is a disease of being cut off, alienated, alone, living in fear, competition, obsession, isolation. And adhering to a code of morals doesn't heal that sense of separation. It doesn't enable me to feel love. So again, from the big book, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will all these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by our will, was not sufficient. They failed us utterly. So lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to see, I wrote all these notes in here. It's amazing, I can read anything. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. So now we get to power. Remember here that no particular God is being advocated, or no particular path. The chapter is only trying to convince us of the need for a higher power. And so how do we get this spiritual experience? The chapter seems to describe a process. First, I must be willing, or willing to be willing. Next, I need to take action based on that willingness. So being willing, make an approach, and then somehow, magically, by being willing and taking action based in that, it will enable me to have a spiritual experience and connect to my higher power. And from pages 46 to 47, we found that as soon as we were able to express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power which is God. We discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception was sufficient to make the approach. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a spirit of the universe, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction. Therefore, Bill W. says, when we speak to you of God, we mean a God, your own conception of God. Jumping back to what I can find troubling about this chapter, I noticed that it says, it is impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power which is God. So I don't need to be troubled that Bill W. refers to his God as he, or that Barb's God is she, or that many of my AA friends conceive of God as a being instead of the way I understand it as the infinite web of how the universe operates. I don't need to get defensive that my concept is different from anyone's, because we do not need to consider another's conception of God, period. So to sum up, we found that, from the bottom of page 46, we found that God does not make too hard terms for those who seek him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all of us. Mm-hmm. Kathy, you got anything to add, or take it away?
I appreciated a lot of what you had to say there, and two of the things that were key, which I see, is the talking about willingness, just having a willingness to even think about something other than the way we've thought about it. And I feel like that's not just about our higher power, but it's about the whole program. It's about a whole way of life and the way we change our way of life when we come into this program and really earnestly seek recovery. And the other thing that strikes me in this little section is about, on page 47, it says, "Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you." I think that falls back to what Katie was just talking about, that we all have our own conception of God. And what kind of puts my back up when I hear people talking in particular ways about religion or something like that, I have to put that down and recognize that everybody's path is their own. Again, that's what's so important to me about this program, is that we each have our own path and that we honor each other's paths and never try and say, "You have to do it my way." So now I'm going to talk about spiritual experience. I love the spiritual experience. One reason is that it affirms my belief that there is not a one-size-fits-all way of recovery in the solution. And let's see, I'm going to find this. In the spiritual experience, it says in the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. And then skipping down, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. So it's telling us it's okay to have it be different. It confirms the evolution of the process. And that is here. They develop slowly over a period of time. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. I started thinking when we were doing this about how this book was written in 1939. There are many ways that this program has evolved since that time. But the book is still the basis, but the program continues to change and adapt to us. So I really love that. I believe the program helps us move from me, to, which is the problem, to not me, which is the solution. And so I feel like that's what makes this possible. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself or she is herself. So we're learning to not always focus on ourselves. We're so hard focused on that, there's a change happening that people are seeing, and we don't, you know, they see it before we even recognize that it's happening. Let's see, that not me awareness is what we're talking about in this section. What needs to happen is we honestly face and then accept help, which is willingness, and all that takes open-mindedness. So in here, at the end of spiritual experience, willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are essentials of recovery. And then skip back to page 48. The top of 48, there's another example of the evolution of ideas, what I talked about at the beginning, and what it takes to prompt willingness. It says, faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. And then the reasons to believe in a higher power, it interests me that the arguments made in this part of the chapter talks about we have faith in electricity, we have the solidity of steel, we could say technology, we could say space flight. We have faith in all of those things without really seeing how it happens. And yet we oftentimes argue against the concept of a higher power with no more basis for belief. I have in the margin of my book, somebody at this meeting said one day, what do I believe in without a murmur of doubt? What's my higher power? That's something to think about always in our program. And then also, when we might have observed the bottom of page 49, when we might have observed that many spiritually minded persons of all races, colors, and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability, happiness, and usefulness which we should have sought ourselves. That's just, we are observing ourselves again in our illness and not noticing that other people are living free lives without addiction because they have a connection to a higher power. The book points out on page 50 that there are plenty of stories both in the book and that you'll hear in the rooms to help encourage that willingness to believe. And at the bottom of 50, here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power, and to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. And for me, I hear that every time I'm in the rooms. I hear these stories of people, and that goes back to that connection that for me is critical in my recovery, is connection to all of you. That's that for my section. What do you think about that?
Well, I love it. Well, on to faith and the God idea from pages 51 to 54. Or to continue on faith and the God idea, I should say. So Bill W. continues to explain that the God idea works. And again, he's not referring to a doctrine from any particular faith tradition. And although it's clearly rooted in a Judeo-Christian faith tradition, but is easily expanded. It's basically a pragmatic approach. He's not saying to believe in God because it's true or that any particular idea is more true. He's just saying that the God idea is very helpful to others and that it might be helpful to me too. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact in their life, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. Similarly, a little bit later in page 51, the book concludes that fixed ideas or strong beliefs in the impossibility of certain spiritual ideas can get in the way of spiritual or scientific progress. In the realm of the material, men's minds were fettered by superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. Some of the contemporaries of Columbus thought a round earth preposterous. Others came near putting Galileo to death for his astronomical heresies. Are not some of us just as biased and unreasonable about the realm of the spirit as were the ancients about the realm of the material? Even in the present century, American newspapers were afraid, and in this case it's the last century, American newspapers were afraid to put in an account of the Wright brothers' first successful flight at Kitty Hawk. So mathematical proofs or engineering reasoning didn't make Kitty Hawk useful. The airplane idea worked for people because Kitty Hawk flew. So similarly, that the God idea can be relied on is not because of philosophical arguments or proofs. It's because it works for people. And also, just as the fixed idea that flight is impossible can get in the way of developing an airplane. So an unbiased or unreasonable idea about the nature of things can get in the way of developing one's own understanding of spirit, higher power. On page 52, the agnostic or the alcoholic who is agnostic or atheistic is invited to consider that they may need to change their view, or I would prefer to say expand their view, so as to not incite my defensiveness, in order to find relief from their bedevilments. So just like the airplane naysayers had to change their view if they wanted to ride in an airplane, we alcoholics may need some reliance on a spirit of the universe, or we will remain bedeviled. A favorite reading of all of us, I think, or many of us. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than, say, being right? The notion that self-sufficiency could solve these bedevilments is also dismissed. In the section I'm about to read, it specifies agnostics and atheists, but in my experience, believers of all types can also suffer from the pride of self-sufficiency. We agnostics and atheists were sticking to the idea that self-sufficiency would solve our problems. When others showed us that God's sufficiency worked with them, we began to feel like those who had insisted that the rights would never fly. He goes on to make the case that all of us have faith in something, that we believe in something that cannot be proven or is not based in reason somehow, or maybe is just wrong, that we humans tend to believe in something. Faith is part of our nature. And I guess we're left to conclude that since we will necessarily believe in something, why not put our faith in ideas that have proved themselves to be useful? Without knowing it, had we not been brought to where we stood by a certain kind of faith, for did we not believe in our own reasoning? Did we not have confidence in our own ability to think? We found, too, that we had been worshipers. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, money, and ourselves, and then with a better motive? Who of us has not loved something or someone? Were not these things the tissue out of which our very lives were constructed? In one form or another, had we not been living by faith and little else? Kathy, will you take it from here?
I will. A couple things in that that really are important to me is when you're reading at the bottom of page 52, when others showed us that God's sufficiency, and I always feel like, you know, showing is so much more important than telling. When somebody tells me something, it doesn't mean anything compared to what an example means for me. And on page 53, when we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else God is nothing. God either is or God isn't. And to me, that means we either go it alone or we get help. We reach out for help. So that's kind of my thing. Back to page 55. Our book here so far has been trying to prove a higher power by a process of elimination, knocking down every argument against a higher power, and then building it up to the concept that the higher power has been within us all along. On page 55, it says, actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as humanity. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but God was there. God was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that the great reality may be found. It was so with us. I believe the path to recovery is not the destination, but it's the path itself. And higher power is found around us, within us, and within each other. And the next paragraph there, it says, we can only clear the ground a bit if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then if you wish, you can join us on this broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. The book talks about the stories again after this and connecting us to each other. Again, it's not in the finding, it's in the seeking. The solution, like the problem, is out of our control. And if we can really grasp that alcoholism, addiction, is a disease not of our own making, then it can be easier to grasp that the solution is not of our own making also. And then I just have John O'Donohue, who's one of my favorite. And that's another thing, you know, it's like it's in the book. It's all over the place. It's just the seeking. And so just a couple stanzas from his poem For an Addict. At the end it says, that your lost, lonesome heart might learn to cry out for the true intimacy of love that waits to take you home, to where you are known and seen, and where your life is treasured beyond every frontier of despair you have crossed. That's it.
Thanks.
Right on time.